Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips. It's day 36 of New York on pause. Social distancing is working. Let's keep it up. As of April 27th, Elmont has more than 1,100 documented COVID-19 cases. A few miles east, Hempstead has more than 1,800 cases. Freeport now reports more than 1,300 cases. Valley Stream and Uniondale, almost 1,000 cases each. These predominantly minority communities top Nassau County's COVID-19 leaderboard. Why? Today's podcast is a re-airing of the April 26th virtual town hall hosted by New York State Assemblywoman Mikhael Szilagyi. The Assemblywoman is joined by Nassau County legislators Carrie A. Szilagyi and Celia Bynum. Sharing the virtual dais are Drs. Christina Pardo and Martina Hackett. The first voice you hear will be that of State Assemblywoman Mikhael Szilagyi. We'll be right back with the conversation. You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips.
My name is Assemblywoman Mikhael Szilagyi. I represent Elmont Valley Stream Floral Park and the surrounding areas in New York State government. Today, I'm joined by leaders and my colleagues to discuss COVID-19 and the new expansion of testing here in Nassau County. Thank you, the viewer, for logging on. Before we move on, I really want to just acknowledge a lot of our doctors, our nurses, our first responders, and all our essential workers for going on the front line and saving lives and making sure that we operate on some basis of normalcy. Our thoughts and prayers are with our families who are suffering or who have lost a loved one. We are here for you, and it's very difficult, but know that you have a community around you. As I mentioned before, I'm joined by some amazing individuals, and I just want to give them each an opportunity to introduce themselves. So, doctor, go ahead. You can introduce yourself, and then we'll go to Sheila Bino, Carrie, and then Martine.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Christina Pardo. First, I'd like to thank this group for the invitation to participate in this very important dialogue. I am born and raised here in Queens in the Nassau County to a proud Haitian family. Much of my family is here in Nassau County. I've worked in Suffolk County. I work now in Brooklyn. So this really hits home both personally and professionally. I work in Flatbush, Brooklyn. I wear a couple of hats. I'm an OB obstetrician gynecologist. With one hat, but on my other hat, I do a lot of community outreach and work both in our underserved communities here in New York and in Haiti to address health disparities. Unfortunately, what we're seeing firsthand is how our communities are being affected by this pandemic. This platform and getting information out there is very important, and I'm proud to be here with everybody in the group.
Good afternoon, Legislator Celia Bynum. I first would like to thank all assembled on this Zoom, especially acknowledge the Szilagyis who invited me to participate and assembled us this afternoon to bring you some information regarding COVID-19. Aside from being a legislator in the second district, I'm also an executive director for a public housing authority in Suffolk County and in the Huntington Station area, another very hard hit community. It's a hot spot. COVID-19 has impacted even my office. A staff member there became very ill in the very early stages of the pandemic. And this is a real serious mental health crisis that's going across the county and the region, the country. And I think it's important that we address some of the disparities that we're seeing in terms of mortality rates and the like as it pertains to minority communities. I'm very happy about the extended testing that we're going to be able to roll out, even as late as early as this week. We're going to be rolling out two more sites. We'll talk about that later. But we also want to make sure that we're addressing mental health issues that might bubble up during this time as people feel the stress of the pandemic. I look forward to sharing more later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. I hope everyone is doing well, and I wish all the best for you and your family, especially on this Sunday. I pray for God's blessing and protection on your families. I want to thank the Assemblywoman for organizing this and all our participants, including my colleague, Legislator Sila Bino, Ms. Hackett, and Dr. Pardue. It's a pleasure, again, to work with you, and I'm big fans of all the work you do. I would like to express a very strong statement to the community to please continue doing social distancing, that we're doing a great job of social distancing. If it was not for social distancing, we would have seen higher infections and more deaths. And I'm very proud of our community for social distancing and helping others in this time of need. I'd like to thank our first responders and our nurses and our essential workers. I remember the Assemblywoman led a movement to help increase the minimum wage, and she focused on fast food workers. And I'm glad that we see the importance of these people and what they do for our community and our society. They make they enable our society to operate. But again, there's gonna be a lot of great information we're gonna share during this program. Please keep a pen and paper or your phone next to you so that you could jot down some important information. I want to thank Legislator Bino for helping to push for more testing. As a result, with the efforts and the aid of County Executive Curran, we will see new testing sites all throughout our communities, and I'm looking forward to that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you as well. I echo the appreciation to bringing this together, and also to all of you who are out watching this, whether live or at another time. I think that you are those ones who are those conduits of information and the sort of key linchpins in your communities. And so I appreciate you using this time to be able to learn more so that you can share with others. My name is Martine Hackett, and I am an associate professor at Hofstra University and the director of public health programs. And I really hope to be able to use this opportunity to shed a little light on this pandemic from a public health perspective. We know that public health is something that most of us are now more familiar with as a concept that we might not have been in a way we might not have been before. And public health focuses on prevention, health promotion, and populations. And so it's my hope to be able to convey some of those messages and also, as importantly, what we can look forward to and what we should be, what should be the bare minimum should be it within our communities of color in Nassau County.
We're gonna kick off with our doctor who is gonna highlight and talk about COVID-19 from a nuts and bolts treatment perspective. I know we're all experts now, 56 days since the first case, but definitely we want to hear from a doctor, a medical professional such as yourself, and especially you who also been on the front line. So thank you.
Sure. So I think what's probably, before we start anything, the most important part for everybody, the community, to understand that this is new. As was stated, this started at the end of 2019. So everything is still being studied and tested. This is an evolving situation. So, stay in touch with what's happening, your healthcare providers, your local health professionals, your local leaders, to know the most up-to-date information. But as of right now, the nuts and bolts, obviously we know that this is a virus that is highly contagious and has spread quickly in our communities. It is spread from person to person, especially when there's close contact. We talk about that 6 feet through respiratory droplets. So if somebody coughs or sneezes and is not covering that cough or sneeze, those droplets can spread. They can also be on surfaces and can stay there for a couple of days. And then if you somebody else touches those surfaces and touches your eye, touch your nose, your mouth, and that is another way that it can spread. Very importantly, that it can spread without being sick. And so everybody needs to take precautions. And this is very important, especially I'm going to get to for those who are at higher risk. So if we work in the healthcare field, if you work in the supermarket, if you work in the fast food store, if you work on the bus or wherever you if you're working right now, you are an essential worker and you are therefore at increased risk and you may very well have the infection without symptoms. And then we bring that home. Which is why it's very, very careful, important that we all take the precautions. How do we do that? We hear a lot about social distancing, although I think some of us have turned toward using the term physical distancing. So, you know, we obviously can communicate and be social with each other, but it's the physical distance that is important. That's 6 feet apart. Wear a mask. If you have to leave the house, you should only be leaving unless if you are an essential worker or going out for essential reasons. You're going to see your doctor, you're going to the market, you should be wearing a mask. Do not wear a mask that healthcare professionals use so that we can have those protective equipment for the hospital. You can use a cloth-based mask if you are not working in an essential capacity. Clean surfaces frequently throughout the day. Do not come together in groups. I've noticed over time, I think everybody has noticed that we see more people outside. I think that probably just, you know, a combination of the frustration of being isolated and at home. And also we're seeing improvement in the numbers. So, you know, a lot of people are going out. I've also heard of people having gatherings, you know, at their house. And really this is dangerous because again, some of us are essential workers. Some of us may have an infection without showing it. And then we are bringing it to whomever we are gathering with. Those at risk, you know, we talked about the healthcare workers, police, fire departments, anybody who is working right now is considered essential. And but we are also part of those who are the most at risk. And this is really a very important part for our community, communities of color, immigrant communities, Haitian communities. We are a significant portion of that service community. And so many of us are still working. For many of us, it's in our blood. Most of my family is in a service field in some capacity. We live here in Long Island. We work in Brooklyn. We work in Queens. We work all over the city, as do I. And then we come back home to Nassau County or wherever it is that we work. I work in Brooklyn, and I will tell you most of the home health aides, certified nurse assistants, many nurses are Haitian or of Caribbean origin. In our families, in our communities, we're used to being together, we're used to embracing, and these are all unfortunately risk factors for having that asymptomatic spread. So what do I do to protect myself and my family? I'll use as myself as an example. I now have dedicated everything for when I go to the hospital. I have dedicated sneakers, scrubs. I wear a cap over my head when I go to the hospital. And when I come back home, those sneakers stay outside or right at the door. I immediately remove my scrubs and put them in a plastic bag to be washed in the laundry with hot water and detergent. I go and take a shower, you know, hot shower before I even get close to anybody else. If I am around, if I know that I've been caring for patients with coronavirus, I do even more. I am mindful not to embrace or really get too close to others because I am concerned about that asymptomatic spread. And I clean off everything that I have touched, and we frequently clean throughout the house. So all of these are really very important points as we go forward. And the last part that I just want to address, if you think you are exposed or are sick, call the local health department, call the physician. There is not always a necessity for you to go to the emergency room. Most people will resolve symptoms, will be better without having to go to the emergency room. Symptoms are fever, a dry cough that you may have. The time to go to the emergency room is if you have severe symptoms, if you have shortness of breath, chest pain, you feel like your mind is you can't concentrate, is not the same, call the emergency services, let them know that you think that you have coronavirus, and make sure that you're taken to the emergency room and wear a mask to protect yourself and to protect others. And for those, whether you have coronavirus or not, very important, we have to take care of our medical illnesses that we had before and during this. So if you have high blood pressure, if you have diabetes, whatever it is, we have to make sure we take care of ourselves. Most doctor's offices are now able to do phone or video visits so that you can keep on top of of what's going on. And also the regular emergencies will still continue. And I know a lot of people are afraid to go to the hospital, to the emergency room. Heart attacks, strokes, all the other emergencies are still happening. And if you think that those things are happening, please do not be afraid of the emergency room or the hospital in delaying accessing care, because we think that that is probably happening as well. All hospitals are taking all the precautions necessary to protect you, all the patients that go there, and ourselves. So please, if you have a real emergency, do not be afraid to go to the emergency room if you have an emergency. Pregnancy, we get a lot of questions about that. How will this affect pregnancy? Again, to start off at the top, this is all still being studied, and we are limited to the information that we have. Pregnant women are in frequent contact with their OBGYN, so you will get the most up-to-date information about you and your pregnancy from your OBGYN. But in general, right now, there is no information that says pregnant women are at higher risk of getting really, really sick. So usually for the flu, they are at higher risk of getting really, really sick. Nothing shows that right now at the moment, but all of this is being followed. Will this pass? If I do get coronavirus, will it pass to the baby? Right now, we don't have anything that shows that, but again, this will continue to be studied. How else will this affect my pregnancy? If you do have coronavirus, you will be managed the same way as those who are not pregnant. If you have mild symptoms, you likely will be monitored from home, severe symptoms in the hospital. For those, even if you do not have coronavirus, again, to protect everybody, visitors are usually restricted just to one visitor in the hospital. And in most places, that one visitor has to stay the entire time and has to wear protective equipment, again, to protect everybody that is involved. And that's probably the way most will be affected. If there's any questions, you know, at the end, I'm happy to answer any more questions, but stay attuned to what your local health department is saying, as this is an evolving situation.
You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips.
I really like the change in terminology. It's not social distancing, but physical distance. Yeah. It does help a lot of people. Now on to the conversation regarding health disparities in public health. You know, it is said that the virus is a great equalizer, but we know that there's systemic health disparities and gaps in certain communities. So Ms. Hackett, Dr. Hackett, can you address the public health aspect and also the health disparities when it comes around this perception of Nassau County? Because, you know, people think that Nassau County is a wealthy, beautiful area. We all have mansions and ponies, but unfortunately that's not true.
Yep, thank you so much for asking the question, because I do think that it's of course extremely important to focus on this on an individual level in terms of protecting ourselves, protecting our family members, and protecting our first responders. The idea though, from my perspective, I get to look at how does this land on a population level. And when we look at coronavirus in Nassau County, as you mentioned, Assemblywoman, we definitely see some patterns that are similar across many different health issues in Nassau County. We know, for example, that the Department of Health in Nassau County started publishing data around the number of positive cases by community in the end of March. And as they were doing that and updated that daily, we quickly saw what communities had the highest numbers of positive cases. Communities like Elmont, Valley Stream, Freeport, and Hempstead. And so this sadly has continued in almost a month later, that we see that these are the communities that are far and away have the highest number of positive cases. So it's also not too much of a stretch, since this is an infectious disease, that we see that those positive cases are likely an underestimate. We know that there has been limits in testing and testing availability. We know that in many of these communities, people are living in much closer quarters with each other, families doubled up and other multifamily dwellings. So even for all of those high numbers, we can safely assume that the numbers are most likely higher for people who have not been tested. And so once we start to look at that and we start to see that these are within communities of color, we add to that what we sadly already know, that communities of color have higher predispositions to diseases like hypertension and diabetes and pulmonary issues, which are also the leading conditions or pre-existing conditions that are the ones that lead to more fatalities. And so again, once we sort of add together the location of where these high number of cases are to the existence of these pre-existing conditions, to the existence of a lack of testing, and also the ability, lack of trust, to be quite honest, within communities in terms of being able to go out and seek help and trust the messages that are being presented, we see that we have all, what we have now is a higher fatality rate for Blacks in Nassau County than even in New York City. The fatality rate of in Nassau County for Black non-Hispanics is 2.5 times that of the fatality rate of whites in Nassau County. And as I just said, that fatality rate is also higher than it is in New York City. And so when we think about this, we again, we certainly could not have predicted this pandemic would necessarily happen when it happens. But one of the things that we could have predicted was how to address it. Since we already knew that these pre-existing conditions were there, and also the conditions for which an infectious disease like COVID-19 can spread, I'm really sort of, I guess, glad that these testing sites are opening in closer in communities. But I will say that Suffolk County opened those testing sites in communities over two weeks ago. And so I just think about that. I think about like who might have gotten lost, who might not have gotten tested because the testing sites were only available to people who had many of the symptoms or out in Jones Beach and without access to transportation. So when it comes to looking at this from a public health perspective, I really would just like to emphasize that when we are talking about our communities of color, which we know here in Nassau County are sort of in sadly just a select number of zip codes, we have to anticipate what is going to happen. It's not good enough to just sort of react to things after they've happened. And I would also argue that I hope that this is also something that is put into place for the planning. As we plan phase reopening, communities need to be involved, stakeholders need to be addressed and consulted, because we are only gonna be as successful as we are as in as much as people trust the messages that are coming out, trust the resources that are available for them, and also be able to help to plan how we are able to stay healthy. Because if this pandemic has taught us one thing, is that we are all connected.
You are listening to a conversation on COVID-19 and its public health policy implications.
The message of trust.
The conversation is facilitated by New York State Assemblywoman Mikhail Szilágy.
The nuances of the community. So I know Legislator Szilágy has really been calling for increasing testing in this area in Elmont and in Valley Stream. So I want to go to him to really discuss, you know, what's going on with testing in our area and how we're expanding testing in generally Nassau County.
Thank you very much. I appreciate. Thank you, Dr. Hacken. Thank you, Dr. Perdue, for your contributions and for the very important statements you made. It is important that in order for us to go forward, we have a robust, consistent method of testing. As you may recall, the state currently is doing random testing across Nassau County. I believe on Friday, they were in Freeport and another area in Nassau where the state was just doing a random sampling at supermarkets to see, you know, what percent of the population has been exposed. They were using the antibody test to see who had the antibodies. And to my understanding, and please correct me, because I think you were on the conference call as well, Legislative Bino, but it was around 16 to 17% positive. Did they see that the people were already exposed from our current population in Nassau County? And so in order for different portions of our economy to be reopened and people to be reintegrated into society and people to get back to what is a new normal, I believe that we need a robust method of testing and testing that is a rapid test that produces the results within a short amount of time so that if the individual has been exposed to COVID-19, that they're not infecting all those around them. We want rapid testing. And so we've been advocating for that. I want to thank my colleague, Legislator Bino. I want to thank the county executive. We called and this is really the start. And we have to make sure that we start correctly. And so, for example, in Elmont, where we have a high number of individuals infected with COVID-19, we have a testing site at 161 Hempstead Turnpike. It is a federally qualified health community center. You can go there. No questions will be asked regarding your immigration status. And we wanted to make sure that it was designed in a one-stop shop fashion. I want to defer to my colleague, Legislator Bino, really want to make sure that once people get there, what other information are they getting? You know, we want to make sure that they're getting information from social services to learn about what benefits and services they're eligible for and unemployment services. And so Legislative Bino was really instrumental in making sure that once individuals have the courage to get to the testing site, what happens there and what other information do they receive? And so I would like to defer, please, to Legislator Bino.
You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips.
Thank you, Legislative Szilagyis. So as stated, when I met with the county executive via phone with the physical distancing that we're doing, I spoke with her about the importance of having a comprehensive plan. We can't just test. We have to, once folks come in and they've been tested, we need to do an assessment to determine whether they're food insecurities, whether they have the ability to isolate at home, whether there is a concern regarding going to work because they have to keep the roof over their heads, that we should be giving them a consultation on some of the benefits of the CARES Act that they might be entitled to. We need to talk to them about the Department of Social Services. What service can we provide to them through the county? And a whole host of different community organizations are out there doing great work. We need to link them with those organizations. No person who walks in to one of those sites should ever leave without having a box of food that could carry them for the week. Because even if they don't have COVID, they're presenting symptoms and they are sick. And so we don't want them leaving there to go to the store. We don't want them to have to worry about how they will put the next meal on their table. So everyone who comes in, who's tested, leaves with a box full of food that can feed them for the week. We are also going to then do follow-ups. We should be doing follow-ups with those families to make sure that they have applied to DSS for whatever programs that they would be eligible for. We have been able to put an online application for much of the services that we are currently providing. We also have taken into consideration, language access. So information would be translated so that individuals can apply online. Unfortunately, some of the services still require a paper application. We are going to facilitate that via mail, and we will be able to work with those families. In addition, when the families leave, we want to make sure that they have PPE. They're walking out. We know that they're sick. They need to have face masks. They need to be able to have gloves and the proper equipment so that when they go home, that they can, as best as possible, maintain some level of sanitary conditions so that they're not spreading this disease to anyone that they might coexist with at home. In addition to that, Nassau County is utilizing services through Long Island Harvest, okay? And we've engaged in a contract with them so that we could come out into communities like Elmont, Hempstead, Newcastle. They're gonna be in Hicksville, they're going out to Levittown, and we're going to bring food services to that community at a larger scale, because we know that a lot of people are in desperate need at this point for food. And we know that people are not working, and unemployment is delayed. And those $1,200 checks that are coming from the federal government have also been a little bit delayed. So we wanna make sure that everyone who needs food has an opportunity to have food on the table. So just this past Thursday, we were in Hempstead and we were able to give 1,300 families food that will sustain them for an extended period of time. We know that we can't just test. We also have to do the contact tracing. It's important that we do that. The staffer that I referred to in my earlier comments that I work along with in Huntington Station, she was tested very early on and was confirmed to have COVID before this region had even hit double digits. Okay, so this is before we got to the 100th person to be diagnosed with COVID. And so very early on, she was tested, and unfortunately, she was in Suffolk, she lives in Suffolk. We didn't hear from the health department at that time. Everybody was still trying to get their minds around what was happening to us in this region. And so she never received a call to tell her that she should, stay at home, and that her family members, because they have direct exposure to her, that they should stay at home. They didn't ask her where she worked, what kind of work environment she was in, what kind of interfacing she does with her colleagues. Thankfully, because of my position here in Nassau County, I was aware that we needed to self-isolate. The staffers, because we work in a very small environment and we're very interdependent on each other in terms of sharing work product and the like. So I immediately closed the office and we all self-isolated. Had we not done that, the spread, right? They said each person that comes in contact them, and Dr. Pardo might be able to have more definitive information, but it's multiple people that you have the risk of transmitting the disease to, the infection to. So self-isolation and making people aware that they have been exposed is important. Self-isolating is key in this, right? And then the third part of that is making sure that we're mentally well, I think. I think it's important that we start dealing with mental health on this issue. We have a lot of people who feel isolated, as they stay safe at home. We have folks that have a sudden change to their routine, and they're now not able to go to work, school, and the like, and then the financial impacts are stressful. And then we have a lot of people who are going out to work every day, essential workers who are experiencing stress. And so it's important that we take care of our mental health at this time. And I'm very happy that Nassau County had opened up a crisis line specific to COVID-19, anyone who might be experiencing stress. So I'd like to give that number out right now. It's 516-227-8555. And there are people who will answer the call. And then the state also has a call line as well. maybe Assemblywoman Salajas may have that number, but we have over 4,700 health professionals who have volunteered to be able to assist people during this time. So I think it's important that we do have to deal with the health aspects, but I think we have to deal with this comprehensively if we're going to come out of this on the other side. Thank you.
Definitely a lot of great information. And we have a couple of questions, but I'm going to leave that for the end. With regards to what you mentioned with mental health, yes, the state has a hotline, and the hotline is 1-844-863-9314. And that's a mental health hotline. In addition, the state is collaborating with Headspace, which is an app that provides meditation guidance and tips. And you can go on to headspace.com/NY New York state of mind and be able to get more information. In addition, just to plug in some more local resources, Nassau County has a hotline, as you mentioned, 516-227-9570. In addition, they have a text line if you're interested in getting text. Text COVID-19NC to 888-777. And they have multiple languages as well. And I'm going to post a lot of this information in the comment box. But I wanted to just go over some resources that other resources that might be available. So it was mentioned before about unemployment insurance. We have a huge problem when it comes to the Department of Labor and unemployment insurance. People are not getting callbacks. There are issues with getting the payment. They're not getting the amount they're supposed to do. So definitely if you're having issues with unemployment insurance, I would say reach out to your state elected officials. They have a direct line with Department of Labor and they can advocate on your behalf. But you also have to be patient. Hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers applied for unemployment insurance. In addition, on the federal level, they started a pandemic unemployment assistance program that puts an extra $600 on top of your unemployment insurance payment. So that system is complex in itself. So there's a lot of kinks that need to be worked out. So, you know, they're flying the ship while they build it. So we ask for your patience, but we do say if you are having an individual problem, you can contact your state elected officials and they should be able to help you. In addition, if you have COVID or if you have to self-quarantine, you have your job protected. In March, we actually passed legislation to ensure that there's job protection if you are self-quarantined or sick due to COVID. So there's details about that on the website paidfamilyleave.ny.gov/COVID-19. So please have that information. In addition, a couple of people called me about DMV. They're saying that DMV is closed, obviously, because we have to do physical distancing. But a lot of the service is available online. If you log on to dmv.ny.gov, you can update update a lot of your information. And a lot of the deadlines were extended. So if your license actually expired, it's been extended. So that is good. In addition, the deadline for filing both your state and federal taxes have been moved from April 15th to July 15th. On the county level, they also delayed property taxes, correct, legislators? What's that information?
So we recently passed legislation, but it was also an action by the county executive and the governor to extend the deadline to pay the property taxes, which is the final half of the school tax, by June 1st without any penalties. And also the county, you can grieve your property tax assessment. And the deadline, I believe, is coming up very soon, which is, I think, April 30th. Is that correct, Ms. Bino, Legislator Bino?
Correct. It was extended until April 30th.
So that's a good opportunity.
And now that you have time on your hand, I'm so sorry to interrupt, Assemblywoman Salajas. And now that you, for individuals who have more time on their hands, if you would like, you can go to my county website, Carrie Salajas. And you can see that there is on YouTube, there's a video that shows you how you can grieve your property tax assessment. Again, the deadline is April 30th. If you have questions, you may reach out to my office, 516-571-6203. Thank you.
There also is a need for blood donations. So if you are usually one that donates blood, we ask you to reach out to like the Red Cross or any sort of blood donation organization and see if you can schedule an appointment because the reserves are very low. So that's a way that you can help. And lastly, we know for the students, it's a challenge with distance learning. Many of the students are having certain issues with certain platforms. I know that the schools are diligently working through that, but the June Regents is canceled. So there's new graduation requirements. And I know that the Department of Education is looking at all those issues. And we want to ensure that the children are able to have a higher standard and be able to learn. So, you know, we're working out some of the kinks, but, you know, rest assured, our students are first, and we're gonna look to provide them with a quality education. And then, oh, one more thing, which is vitally important, is the census. So if you haven't done your census, this is the perfect time to do it, because it's important that we have an accurate count. As you see on a federal level, we are not getting the money back that we are giving to the federal government. So we have to ensure that we at every dollar. So please, if you haven't filled your census, please do so. The national deadline to complete the census is now August 14th. You do have a lot of time, but don't wait. Just go to my2020census.gov and fill out the census. And that's pretty much it. We have a couple of questions from some of the people on Facebook. And so thank you so much, everyone, for being engaged. So Legislator Bino, you mentioned that that the county is working with Island Harvest to provide food. Is there any food delivery for individuals who are elderly or homebound?
So that's a great question. We've trying to work out something on the calls that we had recently. We're looking to see if we can assist seniors in having some hot food deliveries at least twice a week. I know that Commissioner McCummings is currently working on that. Meals on Wheels is still an option for those that would need food delivery. And in addition to that, I know that some local churches are also, they usually have the food pantry. Instead, they're actually delivering the food. I know that they've been delivering food to 899 Broadway here in Westbury. Divine Gospel Tabernacle Church is undertaking that effort. We don't have any county service at this point that is actually delivering, you know, taking food orders and then going to the supermarket and then making those deliveries. I think that that's something that we're gonna probably have to look at down the road, maybe partnering with some of the local towns that are, you know, able to reach their citizens. I think that that would probably be a good service that they could provide as well. Oh, and by the way, I know that the town of North Hempstead is still running the Project Independence program, where they individuals who live within that town could call Project Independence by calling 311, and that they would be picked up and then taken to the supermarket and then brought back home.
And I just want to add, thank you, Legislator Bino. And I just want to add that Nassau County doesn't have a 311 system. However, for general calls, I'm encouraging individuals to reach out to the Office of Emergency Management and that of Nassau County. And that phone number is 516-572-2240. Again, 516-572-2240. And Legislator Bino, she represents, you know, the Westbury, Newcastle, Roosevelt area, Lakeview, and there's a significant Cribbin population in those areas. And so I would like to ask Legislator Bino and Dr. Hackett and Dr. Pardue just to describe, you know, issues that you have seen in the Caribbean community as it relates to COVID-19.
So as you would know, we're on the front lines. The Caribbean American community are the backbone of essential workers. I come from a Caribbean, you know, background, first generation American. My parents were in public service, and as a result, you know, we find that there's a generation of public servants, and unfortunately, you know, we're being impacted because we're out there, right? Because we're out there. So I think that that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot of families where, you know, people are working in healthcare. They're coming home with the like you say, asymptomatic in some cases. And then unfortunately, we're finding that it's impacting their elder members of the family. And so I've heard too many heart-wrenching stories just like that, where people are coming home from just correction facilities, hospitals, the grocery markets, and they're bringing the disease home to their family. So this has been a real significant concern for us. And I am happy to report that we will be opening the Westbury Newcastle testing site. And it's going to be at 682 Union Avenue, right there on the corner of Prospect and Union. And I just want to clear something up. When I say open up the testing spot, and Carrier is going to, I think Tuesday in Elmont, the site will be quote unquote open there as well. These sites, the federal health systems, they have been testing all along. They have been testing within the minority communities from the very, very beginning. And as stated before, if you walked into the facility, they don't ask you anything about immigration status. They're not interested in that. They will determine whether you have insurance. If you do, they utilize it. If you don't, then you still get care. And they were providing the test. But what Nassau County has done now is been able to procure additional test kits. And so each one of these sites now will have, I think it's 100 test kits per day, and they will be able to do the drive-in testing outside in the parking lot so that they can still conduct their regular health services that they're providing on the inside of the center. So what we really are only doing is expanding the opportunity for that service. Just wanted to clear that up. Thank you.
You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips.
Dr. Hackett, or doctor, would you like to address this topic?
I will just say that, you know, I think that it's, we know that our Caribbean communities are, as was just mentioned, the backbone of the service industries and the frontline workers. But we also know that these communities also suffer disproportionately from many of the health conditions, as we mentioned as well. And so I think that, as was mentioned earlier, is that we also need to care for our families, right? We need to make sure that our conditions, those pre-existing conditions, do still need to be addressed. And I would also just say that when it comes to thinking about these communities, is that they should always be in the forefront of our minds, that we are all equal when it comes to thinking about that, but we should also recognize where might additional services might need to be available. And I'm pleased to know that the Nassau County Legislature has recognized that these are communities that are not only the people who are serving, but may also be the communities that need additional support as well.
And I'll add from kind of what everybody has already said, this community does represent a large part of the service community. But as with every other condition that has health disparities where communities of color suffer disproportionately, it is a complex and multi-layered situation that is contributing to it. So for this, the fact that we are more likely to be in a service community, but also communities of color are all disproportionately less likely to have certain healthcare structures and access to social programming and support as other communities may have. And that is why, you know, we can think of this as like an acute on chronic insult. There were chronic conditions in the social, as we say, social determinants of health, where we live, what we have access to, that made us higher risk for certain things, not us, our biology, but what's around us. And now we have this acute insult on top of it that has really kind of, you know, taken off the Band-Aid of how we are all affected. So it just says that just like it is a multi-layered complex issue, it requires a complex and multi-layered solution. So from the individual one-on-one that your doctor may say to you, important information like Dr. Hackett is studying and putting out there as far as in the public health aspect. And our legislators, is important for us to be represented at the table to speak to what's going on in the community and make sure that we have what we need. So it requires all of us to pitch in our own way and to make sure that we continue that after this, because those things that were there before will continue when this is over.
And I just one thing to just quickly add is that we have to just remember, right, that this, as was mentioned, is an acute situation. But what was the context for immigrants and the way immigrants were being treated and feeling before this happened? That hasn't gone away. In fact, it's probably worsening. And so we have to recognize that our immigrant communities are also under additional pressures with the way that our government is treating them and them accessing services. And so we also have to recognize that that has not gone anywhere, and in fact might also be informing people's reluctance perhaps in seeking care.
And I know it's mind-boggling to think that initially when this all started happening, we didn't have enough PPEs for many of these service workers. And you know, the perception is that America is the greatest country, we have all the resources, our healthcare is the best in the world. But many of our nurses, I know one picture I saw, one of them was wearing a garbage bag as a PPE. And so, you know, I know for myself, looking forward, you know, we need to, as a country, realize that we need to bring manufacturing back. We need to be prepared for pandemics or other, you know, health scares, or, you know, look to ways that we can stop health disparities and make sure that we're all healthier New Yorkers. So I asked all the panelists, this is sort of the last question, where do we go from here? What's your opinion? Where do we go from here?
Sure, I'll start. I would say that I think that if anybody knows definitely in every aspect, where do we go from here? We don't know because what life will be like following this. I think as a society on a whole, you know, as I said, kind of crises show the issues, I would say. And this is really highlighting the gaps that we have in healthcare, in public health, in social services, in our economics. And this is really highlighting all of it. And thankfully we have, you know, social media activists and our representatives that are forcing the issues. Look at what's happening to our communities, not just of color, but rural communities, those who are impoverished, financially strained. And so this is, fortunately for those who have highlighted all of this, this is going to have to change the way that we do things. How do we protect those that are in communities under-resourced and underserved? How do we protect those who do not have a security blanket? Is it okay for employers not to provide health insurance? Is it okay for certain communities not to have protections? Because it's always certain communities that do not have those protections, but those people who are working those jobs are important to our economy and important to our way of life. So I think that there's no way that we can return to what it was before. I think that nobody can right now predict what it should look like after this, besides the fact that we have to have more protections for everybody and make sure that everybody has the support and healthcare access that is needed to protect themselves from an acute event like this.
I could go next and just really echo that to say that this pandemic has certainly revealed what was barely under the rug, that we have to recognize that as we celebrate our frontline workers, we also have to recognize that many of them don't have paid sick days. They don't have access to health insurance. They don't have the ability to decide whether or not they can go to work because of their low wages. And so I think that really, I hope, highlights, yes, we should appreciate, and I love seeing like the ads and the full page ads in the paper and on TV, but there's also, people need to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to this, to recognize that this is not an acceptable way to treat other human beings who are working hard, doing everything that they're supposed to be doing. And so I feel that when it comes to thinking about what's next, we have to think about the immediate term and the long term at the same time. The immediate term for reopening for us right here in Nassau County in New York State is certainly going to require the ability to predict what might happen based on what we've already, the patterns that we've already seen happening. And so the ability to reopen, as I mentioned before, by engaging communities and stakeholders actively in terms of planning and getting out the message, and as well with our legislators to be able to advocate for these larger systemic changes. Because I don't know about you, but I feel that you're going to have a pretty good support from your constituents at this time to be able to make some of those larger, very needed and necessary systemic changes.
I do not want to answer this question in the long term. I only want to answer this question in the short term. I think in the immediate short term, we need to continue social distancing. I think we need to continue enforcement of social or physical distancing regulations. I see a number of businesses in our communities. You know, we're not talking about the major corporation stores. We're talking about, you know, the small mom and pop value store, dollar store, hair product store. They're not abiding by social distancing and physical distancing policies. We have to do more to enforce, to make sure that we could track, you know, any possible cases of COVID. It's all about testing as well. We need to encourage more testing. I am submitting a list to our government leaders of other possible sites that will be good testing sites, even though we're nowhere near there to have we're nowhere near of having a system of robust and consistent testing. We have to make the ask. And as long as we keep on pushing and advocating for our communities, for what we believe our communities need, then we're doing our jobs. And it's been quite difficult because we cannot physically engage with our constituents. However, through phones and text messages and social media and email, we're able to communicate, and we have to use those resources. And so I think we also need to, as you said, paid family leave. We need to have a number of, we have to treat our nurses and our frontline first responders like our beloved veterans, where we are helping them get post-traumatic stress counseling, where we're helping them get debt forgiveness for their loans. Many of these young nurses are still paying loans and they can't even afford a place to live. We also have to long-term shine a light upon our society. I'm dealing with constituents, for example, two Caribbean males who I know, they were working in government, they're retired, they have pensions, but they can't afford to live in Long Island because it's so expensive to live in Long Island. So they're in their 60s and they're continuing to work and they can't afford to take a day off, even with a pandemic. And one individual who I know who fits that description, a Caribbean male in his 60s, he was infected with COVID-19. And thank God he was able to make it out of the hospital. But I'm dealing with another person who's in that same age group, and they're obligated to work, even though they're retired, because the cost of living in Nassau County is very expensive. And so we have to, you know, really take this opportunity to shine a light upon our society and to fix the issues that makes us weak as a society. For example, the issue of young children not having food, and if schools are shut, then they don't have access to food. That's a shame. We should not have a society like that. And so I wanna thank everyone for participating in this conversation. Let's continue it, let's spread the word. And also there is a phone number to make an appointment at these health centers. And that phone number, I'd like to provide you that phone number, please. I apologize. I'm just pulling it up on my other phone. But that
516-396-7500 to inquire about a appointment. Testing will be provided by appointment only. So I recommend not walking up. Do not walk up to the three testing sites, but call and make an appointment. And so the three testing sites are South Ocean Care Health Center, which is at 101 South Bergen in Freeport, New York. The Hempstead Health Center, which is at 135 Main Street, Hempstead, New York, 11550. and the Elmont Health Center, which is 161 Hempstead Turnpike, Elmont, New York, 11003. And if you need testing, call 516-396-7500.
Yes, I'm just going to close by answering a question. I see there's a question about how will this experience influence our public policy decisions. Well, I know, at least for myself, I will continue to advocate for our working class communities the same way, for example, myself and Legislator Bino advocated for property tax relief for our blue collar working class communities like Elmont, Roosevelt, Freeport, Lakeview. Recently, we were able to pass a taxpayer protection plan that would protect anyone who received a tax increase, that increase would be calculated over a period of 5 years and not just in one shot. And so this experience will continue and strengthen our convictions and our passions to help those in need and to make sure that the stone that was once rejected becomes our cornerstone and that we design a society that protects and supports those individuals.
So to the question about how this will shape my thought process for public policy and how we will deliver public policy, I think we have a long way to go, even on some of the more widely discussed issues around affordable housing. That is yet another concern during COVID, right? You have people who are finding themselves without a place to live during a pandemic. Okay, we have homeless individuals who have COVID and we have to isolate them in a hotel. We have to deal with, you know, how we're gonna house people in the shelters. We're a county that I think could do more in the way of our public policy for affordable housing. I think we could do, we need to do more as it comes to our public policy regarding social services, mental health, and also in how we're gonna deliver healthcare. I would say it's proof in the pudding that this pandemic is gonna hopefully change people's perspective for a long time coming. I don't wanna see it to be a short range change. This is something that we're gonna have to sustain over time. I am encouraged because most recently, there were conversations in the county that really kind of made us wonder what was going to be the future of NUMIC, of our safety net hospital. And their future seemed uncertain. But I am encouraged because the pandemic really made some of those decision makers realize how important that hospital is to communities of color, people that in fact may need assistance and don't have medical coverage, right? So the disadvantaged. So just yesterday, there was an article in Newsday that stated that the county executive is now trying to find a way to resuscitate and bring some money back into that hospital. And I received a call from her just yesterday asking me to serve on a very small panel with her and the president of and CEO of the hospital, Robert Detour, to see how we can fund and continue to find funding for the hospital. It's important that our public policy is geared toward creating opportunity for better health services and making sure that everyone who needs to see a doctor, to see a nurse, has the ability to go in and be treated properly. This is a time such as this, we can't squander this time. This is a time while we're physically distancing for us to still roll up our sleeves and get the work done, for us to look at life through a different lens and make sure that when we're making our policies that we're considering the impacts that they will have to communities and make sure that our intentions are to do no harm and more importantly, to help. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. All great comments. We're, you know, we hit the hour mark, so we're just gonna wrap up everything. Is anyone interested in giving any closing remarks? It's welcome to anyone. Any closing last words, anything, any call to action, anything's welcome.
I just wanted to say one thing. I'm not necessarily the closing, but I realized I wrote down, I forgot to say in the prevention, I didn't say wash hands, which I know everybody knows, but I just want to make sure say it again. Wash your hands frequently with hot water, especially, or not, you know, not burning hot water for at least 20 seconds. If you don't have that, use an alcohol-based sanitizer that has at least 60% of alcohol in it. And one thing I forgot to mention about for those that if somebody is positive or is suspected to be, I know unfortunately in many communities there may not be a lot of space, but to as much as possible for that individual to be in a room or a space by themselves. If there are more than one bathroom, they should use their own bathroom, making sure that we're washing linen and cleaning the bathroom and surfaces often, if there is somebody that is in the household that is coronavirus positive.
That's a very good point. And also when you're not able to physically distance, to wear a face mask. And I know that it's not for yourself really, it's really to protect or to stop the virus from going out and protecting others. Is that correct or?
That's correct, yes. And if you're not a healthcare professional, again, we all know, we've heard about the shortages of protective equipment. So if you are not a coronavirus positive, you're not an essential, you know, worker, you know, please use a cloth-based a mask, you know, rather than the masks that are used by healthcare professionals.
Again, just a quick thank you. For all that are assembled on the phone, on the call, and on the Zoom, I really just want to thank Assemblywoman Szilágyi's, County Legislator Szilágyi's, for bringing us together. There's much more to do, and we will look for the support of Dr. Hackett and Dr. Pardo as we move forward. I do agree that there needs to be we need to start the discussion now on how our communities recover. And I'm happy to say that Long Island Regional Director of the NAACP, Tracy Edwards, is starting that discussion. And I'm going to be a part of that discussion because we do have to look at life is not going to be as it was 6 weeks ago. Unfortunately, there will be places of businesses that have closed and will not be able to reopen. This is a time for us to find out how we can best serve our community, our business community, our residents, and be able to, you know, get past this. And again, as they always say, we are in this together. So thank you for bringing us all together.
Just one final thing. We're leaders here, right? Nassau County has the second highest number of COVID cases and second highest number of deaths in the country. And so we need to recognize we're setting a tone. You know, people are looking at us to see how we are responding. And I just from the words spoken here, I feel that we are all of a same mind, that we need to be able to sort of be the change that we want to see.
And just to continue physical distancing, today for the first time since March, we've gone under the 400 mark of deaths, which is something that we should pat our back because we're stopping the spread, we're flattening the curve. But it's not a time to go out and celebrate. It's not a time to go out and congregate and you know, hang out and go to the beaches or the parks. It's really a time to continue social distancing. In the next couple of days, if not a week, Governor Cuomo is going to be announcing whether we're going to extend New York pause, which means that 100% of the essential workers stay home, so, or you know, the schools open, all that. And so I would just continue physically distancing and taking all of the precautions. But like it was said before, we're in it together and that we are here for you. So whether you need mental health support, food, or any other initiatives, just reach out to your elected officials. We are here. We are on the front lines with you fighting. And so I thank everyone on this Zoom for coming together and putting our minds together and look forward. Maybe we can come back and do this again, right? That's it. Carrier, doctor, would you like to say anything else?
No, I wish everyone well. Please stay safe. God bless everyone. And please, let's continue to serve as leaders and help others in need.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We appreciate it. Please share, like, follow all these people on Facebook, Instagram, any social media. They're there. They're leaders in conversation. But I thank everyone for watching and participating and look forward to being together. Thank you.
You were listening to a conversation on COVID-19 and its public health policy implications. The conversation was facilitated by New York State Assemblywoman Mikhael Szalasz. The Elmont Online Podcast is brought to you by www.elmont.org, where residents go for cutting-edge commentary, real-time news feeds, and more. Elmont.org, building a stronger community since 1999. Thank you for listening. Between now and the next time we meet, be safe. I'm Aubrey Phillips.